The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning, everyone. I thought today it would be good to talk about learning and no learning. As we approach the year's end, it's a good time to pause and reflect. And this year, due to the sea changes brought on by COVID, the future ahead doesn't look to be the old normal. Things are changing. Things will be different. We can't go back. And so we're faced with preparing for the unknown. So it does feel like a good environment to explore what we've learned so far during the time of COVID. More importantly, to explore how we learn. The last Dharma talk I gave was in March. It was right after the lockdown, or the beginning. And using David Thoreau's Walden Pond retreat and the writing that emerged from it, I wondered what might come of all this time in COVID, in a time of social distancing. What would we learn? I asked, what might civil disobedience look like during a time of COVID? Well, what I saw were phone zaps. What I experienced were participating in phone zaps to the Department of Education to implore them to make science-based decisions in sending teachers and students back into the classes. I also experienced marching down Fifth Avenue with fellow Village Zendo members as part of a large coalition to protect the vote. People learned or rediscovered all kinds of things about themselves during COVID. Personally, I learned a great deal about my impatience. Those of us born under the sign of Aries, or may have an Aries in their life, have perhaps caught a glimpse of this like really impatient nature. I experience it as an annoying sensation in wanting things to advance more quickly to my ideal of what they should be. In my study of this impatience, I really haven't learned anything, but I have discovered the value of pausing and making space to observe my impatience and notice its comings and goings. But nowhere did I learn more and face more challenges, exit my comfort zone, so to speak, than teaching in the classroom during the time of COVID. I've been a college professor for close to 30 years now. I'm a filmmaker and I teach how to make films. And I've always enjoyed the complete engagement I feel when I teach. There's nothing else. It's just complete immersion into what I'm doing. I've taught when I'm sick. I've taught the day after I buried my father. I've taught during national crises. And I really don't think I've taken more than 5 sick days in 30 years of teaching. But this semester truly kicked my ass. And it really, it brought me to the verge of early retirement. I just didn't know how I could continue. You couldn't plan because I never knew whether I was going to be teaching in the classroom or remotely on Zoom. So the material I would cover would be vastly different. So classes had much more of an improvised feel, and which is sometimes a good thing. Not knowing, being ready for the unexpected, and getting through the day safely were my goals. But what I found truly demoralizing was not teaching in person, not teaching on Zoom, but being forced to do both at the same time. because I was split. The students in the class, I had a mask on. They were about 12 feet away from me, and I was sort of half yelling to them into this mask across the room. And as the class went on, the mask would get damp and become harder to breathe. And I couldn't hear them because, being hard of hearing and wearing hearing aids, you know, I get so much information from reading lips. So they were wearing masks. So it was frustrating. And meanwhile, the poor students on Zoom, they were looking at this beaked professor, you know, with her head like bobbing all up and down, getting more and more harried as the class went on. And on top of everything else, in my first class of the day, beginning film, someone started making noises. They were like these human chirps and gasps. And I just didn't know what it was, and I didn't know how to take it. At first, I thought that, you know, maybe somebody was being a wise guy. But, you know, the class was a good group, and I didn't cotton much to that theory. I figured maybe somebody had Tourette's. And so I just carried on and said nothing. And, you know, I found in the scope of everything else that was going on, it really wasn't that disruptive. We all got used to it, the whole class. It was just more of like the going with the flow, the unpredictable nature of Intro to Film 2020. Until one day, I was giving a particularly sensitive kind of critique of a student's work, and I was probably in the middle of saying something that I thought was much more important than it was. And this one student, Stephen, who I think was, you know, who was making the sounds, you know, I think I'd narrowed it down. He got up and he had left the class two or three times. And, you know, he was about to get up again. And I just stopped and said, "Where are you going? You know, your coming and going is very disruptive." And he just looked down and left the room. And after class, he came up to me, and he explained that, yes, he had Tourette's. And the reason that he was doing this is because when he felt a major episode coming on, he would leave the room. So as not to have that episode in front of everyone. And this conversation moved me just so deeply, because it felt to me like this space opened up around us when he was talking to me and coming out basically about having Tourette's. And I basically related it, or the way it hit me was in the same spot as it brought me back to being his age and coming out to my mother and her response coming out as being gay. And she grabbed her heart and then said, "You know, I always thought my sister was gay." And so that sense of knowing, not knowing, that opening up to each other, to be surprised by what we know and what we don't know. And interestingly enough, when we step out of that binary too, knowing, not knowing, and look at the function of the expansion that happens in that space, we learn more about how we learn. And so there's a case that I think is very applicable to this situation. It's case 20 in the Book of Serenity. Daizang asks Fion, "Where are you going?" And Fion says, "Around on pilgrimage." Daizang says, What's the purpose of pilgrimage? Fion says, I do not know. Daizan says, not knowing is nearest. And sometimes that last line, not knowing is nearest, is rendered as not knowing is most intimate. So taking a look at the people in this koan for a second, Fion ended up being one of the foremost teachers in Chinese Zen. He was born in 885, died in 958, and he was very scholarly. He entered a monastery at 7, received ordination at 20. He was kind of a up-and-coming guru, in a way, in the among the intelligentsia of the capital. And so he and several other Buddhist scholars set out on a pilgrimage to visit a specific set of temples. Now, some say it was in order to bring the monks of remote monasteries up to date on Buddhist philosophy, but you know, we really don't know if that was the purpose. But on this particular day, the snow and the rain and the flooding forced these pilgrims to basically stop by this monastery that wasn't on their itinerary. And as they walked in the gate and were warming their hands by the fire, there was a glowing stove right there. This is where Zen master Daizang approached them. He was the abbot. And you can imagine from his perspective, he sees this group of young, cold and young men by the gate huddling by a fire, and he decides to go out and talk to them. You know, being a storyteller, I really crave context. Context and character, that's what makes a story. So this act of going up to them and talking with them, engaging with them, making this space to see, where are you going on a pilgrimage? Why? I do not know. Not knowing is nearest. That compassion he offers Fion, who must have been kind of at that point exhausted, cold and wet. I don't know. Maybe it was, I don't know anymore, but I don't know. That compassion he offers, not knowing is nearest. That to me perhaps opened up another expanse of space. And in that space, Fion saw his teacher, and he would stay with Daizang and eventually receive Dharma transmission from him. And I could see for a scholar like Fion, perhaps what he saw in Daizang's teaching, because Daizang was very, very much about everyday Zen. It wasn't about books, it was everyday Zen. There's one story that gives a snapshot of Zen master Daizang. He saw a monk approach and he held up his whisk and said, do you understand? And the monk said, thank you for your compassionate instruction, master. And Daizang says, you see me raise a whisk and say, I'm instructing you. But when you see the mountains and rivers each day, do they not instruct you? It was all for maybe stepping out of some of the formality and allowing your life to fill that space of pilgrimage. And this openness in which we encounter not knowing, it keeps us alert and curious to possibilities beyond our conditioned thoughts. When we don't know, we can see life more as it actually is and give up control because we don't know. Each interaction then has the possibility of being a pilgrimage. Where are we going exactly in this moment? Just this. And suddenly, in not knowing, each moment and each interaction becomes a possibility to meet the self. We meet a person we've already known for 12 weeks, but we meet them anew. We meet the self. When I use words to talk about things like creating a space, they seem like very chunky tools. You know, what am I talking about creating a space? I think it has to do with our attention to not knowing. And we have a very unique opportunity at hand coming up within the next week to make a space for the Dharma to unfold. In her letter to us, Roshi encouraged us all during this Angul period to study, to reflect, to make space. So this is one of the reasons I encourage you all to make that space, to consider joining us for year-end session. And this year in particular, it's going to be very different. All those big boxes that are packed up in the basement at the Broadway location of the Village Zendo, they've all become meaningless. They're going to stay there. We're all bringing our own baggage to unpack during this particular session. And what will come up? And what will come up for you because of something that you saw or heard? That is perhaps what can help us face the unknown of what lies ahead in these challenging months ahead. So I just want to just return to Stephen as I start to tie up here. So Stephen ended up being like one of the best students in the class. And for his final project, he, which was challenging for all the students because, you know, under lockdown, they really couldn't travel about. But he interviewed his girlfriend, who's a Wiccan. And I found this interview so fascinating because I never knew that much about Wicca. But it really ignited a passion in me to learn more about this and this tradition of threefold return, where whatever Wiccans believe that whatever actions you put out in the world, be they benevolent or malevolent, they'll return to you on three levels of body, mind, and spirit. And so, you know, there's a similarity to the idea of karma, but there's also this deep engagement with the earth, which I think is essential for us in this great act of healing that this moment has brought upon us, the need for healing. So on Tuesday, I'll see his final project, and I look forward to seeing how it comes out. And in the spirit of learning something new this Yule, I'm wishing everyone, you all, an expansive practice where each moment can be met fully with appreciation and an inquiring mind that is never ending.